May it please the Court, Fred Rowley, Jr. for the government. The district court suppressed evidence found after federal agents arrested the defendant for participating in a stolen treasury check transaction. The court concluded that the agents lacked probable cause to believe the defendant was involved in the transaction, and the government maintains that was error. Now, it was undisputed below that the agents had probable cause to believe that some criminal activity was taking place. The agents were listening in over a wire as a man named Michael Pass provided $140,000 in stolen treasury checks to a confidential informant. And, in fact, the agents...
How did you tie Collins to that person?
To Michael Pass, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Well, you have to look at the facts taken as a whole. And the undisputed facts...
You tie the two together.
Your Honor...
I want to know why you're talking about the guy that actually physically took custody of the treasury checks from the vehicles to the office, right?
Your Honor, that's Mr. Flores.
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. How do you tie them all together?
Yeah.
Your Honor,
how do you tie this defendant? We're dealing with Collins here.
Yes, Your Honor.
What did Collins do?
Your Honor, the defendant did a few things. First of all, he arrived at the time and place, the precise time and place, where Michael Pass was taking delivery of stolen treasury checks.
Is that sufficient for probable cause?
Your Honor, I think that the facts taken individually are not, but as a whole they are. And the undisputed facts are these. It is important to note that the agents had reason to believe that other conspirators were coming to deliver stolen treasury checks to Michael Pass. And they had reason to believe that for a few reasons. First,
Did they identify Collins as one of those people?
They did not, Your Honor.
Okay.
They did not. But they did have reason to think that there might be more than one source. In the meetings leading up to this final transaction, Pass had adverted to the fact that he did have multiple sources. I believe he said he had three sources. The afternoon before the transaction, he said that one or more of his, I believe the word in the affidavit is connects, might show up to the transaction. And then during the transaction itself, Pass says, my guys are coming with the 400. At that point, he goes downstairs and is waiting in his car when the defendant drives up in the Cadillac, and then another car pulls up on the other side of the Land Rover where Pass is waiting for the delivery of stolen treasury checks. At that point, the defendant gets out of his car. This is after the two cars are on either side of the Land Rover.
How many passengers did we have in each of these cars?
Your Honor, that was the focus of the hearing below. And the district court concluded that there was one passenger in the Cadillac and rejected the government's assertion that there were two passengers in each car. So I believe that the
Cadillac is Collins' car.
That's right, Your Honor. Then after the two cars pull up on either side of the car, where we know that Pass is waiting for the delivery of stolen treasury checks, the defendant gets out and talks to the driver of the Toyota. Now, taking a step back and viewing this activity from the perspective of an agent who has reason to think that there's more than one source who might show up, it's reasonable to infer that the defendant was involved in the stolen treasury check transaction. Now, it might not be enough to prove the defendant guilty, but this is probable cause. They know that there's a transaction taking place, and the only question is whether it's reasonable to infer that this defendant is involved.
How much did the district court accept? What findings did it make on where Flores came from?
Your Honor, I believe that the district court concluded that you could only credit the observations that were in the affidavit, and the affidavit simply does not say where Flores came from.
And the government it says Flores got, after the two cars pulled up.
Yes.
It says Flores got into the Land Rover, didn't it?
That's right, Judge Kim.
Okay. And it doesn't say where Flores came from.
It does not say. Now, the government in its brief argues that it's reasonable to infer from the circumstances the fact that the affidavit does say that the two cars pulled up, and that after the two cars pulled up, Flores got into the Land Rover with Pass, and then the defendant was seen next to the Toyota talking to its driver. It's reasonable to infer from those facts that Flores came from one of the two cars.
Right.
But even if he didn't, you've got Flores inside the Land Rover at a time when the agents know that Pass is going to take delivery of stolen treasury checks. It's also important to note that this was a significant transaction. In the meetings leading up to this final transaction, the informant and Michael Pass had been talking about a transaction in which $2 million in stolen Treasury checks would be exchanged for $200,000 in cash. And over the wire, the agents here, Michael Pass, first of all, deliver $140,000 in stolen Treasury checks, and second of all, say, my guys are coming with the $400,000.
How do you tag Collins with all that information?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
All this information you're putting out in argument, how
yes.
do you tie it to Collins?
Well, it's information that can be imputed to the officer, to the agents who were watching the activity in the parking lot. And so,
yeah, but what's Collins got to do with it?
I think it's relevant, Your Honor, because this is what the agents knew when they were watching this activity take place.
I understand that. But,
yes.
But they're beating in on Collins.
Yes.
And saying we have probable cause, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what I'm interested in, is the relationship between Collins and the agents, not just what the agents knew. I want to know what the agents knew that Collins did or said.
Yes, Your Honor. Keeping in mind that they had reason to think there might be other people involved, keeping in mind the nature of the transaction, the fact there was a lot of money involved, they saw the defendant pull up in a Cadillac on one side of the car in which this check trafficker was waiting. And then they saw another car pull up and park on the other side of that car. So you have what appears to be a coordinated parking job, and the defendant is involved.
So the best you can say is that the agents surmised a common enterprise?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. The inference has to be of concerted activity.
So on the basis of an inference, there can be probable cause.
Your Honor, I think that's what Pringle teaches. Pringle teaches that given the nature of the suspected criminal activity, if the circumstances suggest, and it's an inference in this case, as Your Honor is focusing on, if the circumstances suggest that there's concerted criminal activity, if you've got reason to think that a person is involved in criminal activity that you are observing, there is probable cause. And the whole question is it reasonable to draw that inference here? And the government submits that given this, what appears to be coordinated parking, they don't know for sure, but it appears to be coordinated parking, then the defendant gets out and talks to the driver of the other car, and that conversation is taking place in the parking space next to where Pass is taking delivery of stolen treasury checks.
That conversation wasn't tapped or wired.
It was not, Your Honor. And there's no...
Is there anything in the evidence tell us about the condition of the parking lot? I mean, were there a lot of empty spaces, or was it a busy place?
No, Your Honor.
So there, it could have been a busy parking lot, and the guy in the Cadillac pulls in there when the other one pulls in. I mean, this happens in parking lots. Sometimes people struggle to get a spot, and he went in and he goes over the other car, and for all we know, he could have said, where's a good place to eat? And he said, well, there's Quiznos over there.
Your Honor, the government can't exclude that possibility. That's true. On the other hand, innocent activity can give rise to probable cause, and the standard isn't a certainty. To get back to your first question, there is nothing in the affidavit explicit about the nature of the parking lot. We know that it's 9 o'clock. And the court can apply common sense, and it's unlikely that a strip mall parking lot would be packed at 9 p.m., but you can imply from the affidavit that because the agent thought that there was something peculiar and significant about these two cars parking on either side of the Land Rover, that there weren't other options. But the affidavit does not say, for example, whether there were a bunch of other cars there or not. It simply doesn't. I would like to reserve.
I have one more question.
Yes, Your Honor.
How do we measure your argument? You're asking us to assume that the district court made an erroneous finding of fact, right?
No, Your Honor. We're assuming the district court's facts, and we are arguing that you can draw inferences that give rise to probable cause based upon the facts found by the
district court. You're saying the inferences the district court drew are erroneous.
We believe that as part of this court's de novo review, It can consider what a reasonable officer would think given the facts that the district court concluded were made by them.
Generally fact finders, right?
Yes, Your Honor, you're not.
And we don't have any findings supporting your position from the district court.
Your Honor, I believe the way the district court ruled was the observations made by the officers are those that are set forth in the complaint because the court viewed the complaint as being contemporaneous.
Yeah, but do we have to reverse and send it back so that the district court looks at the whole broad situation and all the inferences arising therefrom? Or can we decide in your favor and say the inferences are there?
Your Honor, I believe that the court can decide in the government's favor based upon the facts that are in the affidavit. And the other thing that the district court considered was the wire transcript, the transcript of the wire, the wired conversation that the government heard.
Testimony was taken, right?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
Well, it could have been based on her reaction to the testimony of the officer.
It certainly was, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But the court did create a factual record of what it believed the officer saw. And those are the undisputed facts that are set forth in the complaint affidavit together with what they heard, which is memorialized in that transcript.
Well, they may have said it, and perhaps she didn't believe them.
Your Honor, I believe the district court certainly had problems with what some of the agents testified.
Well, in fact, she didn't accept some of their testimony. She said that the only facts about the parking lot that we're entitled to consider were the ones in the affidavit that's appended to.
That's right.
All right. So we've got those facts.
Yes.
And then do they or do they not amount to probable cause?
That's right. That's the way the government's framed the appeal.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Sonia Shaheen on behalf of Wayne Collins. Your Honors, I have to start with an apology because part of the, in preparing for this argument and also when I reviewed the government's reply brief, I realized that I made a mistake and that mistake has now been incorporated into the government's argument. So I'd like to start by clarifying that. The mistake that I made was not in laying out what the district court findings were, but in my interpretation or in my summary of what the court's findings were. In fact, when we look at the criminal complaint, there is no finding from the district court that Wayne Collins was even observed to arrive in the Cadillac or that he was observed exiting the Cadillac. There's similarly no finding of fact that Edgardo Flores was observed exiting the gray Toyota Corolla. So, in fact, the only facts that this court is entitled to consider are the fact that a white Cadillac arrived, a gray Toyota arrived, and that at some point after that, Gwayne Collins was observed standing next to the driver of the gray Toyota Corolla. So much of the government's argument...
Well, we can also make the observation that the government was aware on the wire that additional people were coming, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. And
and that there was a meeting scheduled in the parking lot, and darned if the cars didn't all show up, and darned if a meeting didn't occur, right?
That is probably
treasury
true.
Treasury checks wind up in an office across the way, right?
The treasury checks were already in the office at the time of the white Cadillac's arrival. Your Honor, what I'm trying to point out is that there is no evidence tying... In the record, there was no credible evidence that at the time the arrest took place that Mr. Collins was associated with the white Cadillac. So there is no evidence to the timing of how he arrived at the location or even where he came from.
So in your view, he was arrested for talking to the guy in the Toyota?
Absolutely, Your Honor. My position is that although the government argues a common enterprise as in Pringle, Pringle's a very different case. You know, he argues concerted effort, joint activity, but Pringle involved three people in an automobile, and that was intrinsic in the Supreme Court's finding was that three people sitting in an automobile may have a joint motive to conceal evidence of a crime or to act in concert. Here we have a very different situation. We have three cars parked in the consecutive stalls. We have a person who's observed entering past his vehicle. We have Gwayne Collins standing talking to the driver of the Toyota and nothing more. And again, as I state, part of that is my error for incorporating.
Do you think the district court assumed that Collins drove up in the white Cadillac?
Well, Your Honor, it's at the hearing, I'm sure that she probably did because I submitted a declaration stating that. But as this Court is well aware, the determination is made as to what the officers knew at the time that the arrest was made. And based on the Court's findings that the only credible evidence was that what was contained in the complaint, and there was good reason for that. I mean, as the Court is well aware, the evidence presented on the point of whether or not Dwayne Collins was observed exiting the white Cadillac was completely contradictory. We had the Agent Louie, who was the only one who made any observations that night, testified in the courtroom that he observed Collins exit the vehicle. And he also included that in a declaration submitted, I'm sorry, at the hearing and in a declaration submitted in December of 2003, he stated that he did not see Collins exit the vehicle. And then we have a completely contradictory declaration dated October 28th of 2003, where he states that he did see Collins exit the vehicle. So, you know, going back and reviewing the matter, it's no surprise that the Court didn't make any findings in this regard as to whether or not Collins was associated with that vehicle. Again, Your Honors, unless the Court has any questions, I would submit the matter, but it's our position that the district court's factual findings should remain and that there was no particularized suspicion of any criminal activity associated with the defendant.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, briefly, the district court did construe the complaint to omit any reference to the defendant driving the white Cadillac. And in the government's opening brief, it tried to take a cautious approach and argue that the court ought to draw the inference that the defendant came on in one of the two cars and that it didn't matter which one for probable cause purposes. It does say in the complaint, and this is something the district court didn't focus on, but the complaint actually says at the beginning that the defendant drove a conspirator to a meeting. It just doesn't say which car that the defendant drove. And again, the government would just hasten to add that in its view, it doesn't matter. For probable cause purposes, it was reasonable to conclude that he came in one of the two cars. There are cases cited in the government's opening and answering briefs in which courts have drawn inferences of concerted criminal activity based upon circumstances, even though the suspect didn't have direct contact with the principals involved in criminal activity. It does depend upon the surrounding circumstances, and the government believes those are sufficient here.
You say that the affidavit states that the defendant, Collins, drove up and had a co-conspirator in the vehicle with him?
On page 2, Your Honor, and this is something that the district that the district court didn't focus on and, frankly, that the government did not point out in the hearing. But at page, I believe it's GER 2.
So that statement's contrary to what we've been hearing all along.
In which respect, Your Honor? I mean, the affidavit.
There was only one person in the white Cadillac.
Your Honor, it was consistent with the position that the government took at the hearing.
The affidavit says two.
Yes. And that was the position taken by the government. The district court rejected that position, Your Honor. And the government on appeal is taking the district court's findings as she made them. But it wasn't inconsistent with the position argued by the government in the district court. The final point is that it was a significant transaction for quite a bit of money. I mean, if you imagine that it was,
you rely on the officer's observations. If they had two in the car and there was only one,
Your Honor, the agents testified, or Agent Louie, I believe, testified that there were two people in the Cadillac, two people in the Toyota. The district court appeared to rely upon some notes made by another agent some months later, suggesting that there was one in the Cadillac, three in the Toyota. And I think for that reason the court rejected the testimony and limited the facts to what was in the affidavit. But the court didn't really focus on this statement at the beginning of the affidavit saying that the defendant drove a conspirator. It's just to point that out. And again, the government maintains it doesn't matter because you could draw the inference that he came in one of the two cars based upon the timing that's laid out in the affidavit. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Matter of stand submitted.
Thank you.
We come to M2 Software, Inc. versus M2 Communications.